Thank you for joining us for another conversation with Glennis and Daniel.
Thank you, Glennis.
Last episode, we talked about the $15 minimum wage and all the backroom conversations and activism that took place over years to make that a reality in Illinois.
And, you know, that was a public fight, right? Most folks have probably heard about it. You got presidential candidates running on it. It's the newspaper. It's on the news. There's tons of issues. In fact, the overwhelming majority of issues that are just not that controversial, and most people don't know about them. And in that situation, the process is pretty different, and that's what we're going to talk about today.
Right. And anyone can, for anybody who is interested, you can go to the Googles and read about how a bill becomes a law. And basically, someone writes it, introduces it, it gets passed by the House or Senate, then gets passed by the Senate or House, and then the governor signs it. And sometimes it really is that simple, but sometimes it's not. That kind of outline and overview really masks two things. One is a whole bunch of technicalities, which can often turn out to be much more complicated than we might think. And then I think the other one is
politics.
Right. Exactly. But what do you mean by politics when you say that?
I mean, all the considerations that somebody might have that aren't about, like, what's in the bill and how it would make people's lives better. Will it affect your effort to run for re-election next time? Does it hurt your party or help your party to stop it or make it go? All these things that really aren't about what's good or bad for the people, but are in the minds of a lot of the decision makers.
So let's talk about pace.
All right.
Daniel.
Glennis.
I'm going to challenge you to give us a three, not a second more, minute explanation of what PACE is. You're on the clock. Time starts now.
Okay. PACE is an acronym. It stands for Property Assessed Clean Energy. And here's the idea. Let's say you want to do a clean energy project at your house, like you want to put a solar panel on your house or you want to do an energy efficiency project. Probably costs a fair amount of money to do it, but if it works properly, then it's going to decrease your energy bills significantly, right? If you've got a solar panel on your roof, then you don't have to buy as much energy from the electric company, and that brings down your cost. And so over time, it might save you money, but you may not have the cash up front to pay for it. So there's a traditional way to solve this problem if it's a good financial decision for someone to do it, but they don't have the cash up front, which is that they just pay for it month by month on their electric bill, right? Because their electric bill is going to be cheaper month by month. Mm-hmm. And so they just put an extra increment on it to pay down the cost of installing that solar panel. Mm-hmm. There's a problem with that, though. The problem is that if you move, your electric bill follows you, but the solar panel stays in the house that you sold. Mm-hmm. So you're still paying down that solar panel and somebody else is getting the energy.
Wow.
And so PACE is a solution to that problem where instead of paying down that solar bill over time on your electric bill, you pay it down over time on your property tax bill. Because then when you sell your house, the property tax bill transfers over to the person who bought it, and they are enjoying the benefits of the solar panel on the house and paying for it on their biannual property tax bill. And it's totally voluntary. Nobody has to do it if they don't want to. No one should do it if it's not a sensible financial decision for them. And so it's just a tool to allow people to do more clean energy projects.
Ooh. Look at you.
How was the time?
You came in under 2 minutes. I got to be honest. I'm a little surprised. Good for you. Next time, we're going to make it a minute and a half. And then we're going to go down from there. Now I know that you can actually give us something very comprehensive in 2 minutes flat.
I have more to say. So.
No. I think that was enough. That was quite enough. Let's talk about how that's connected to Illinois. Like, how is that relevant here?
So I read about PACE as a thing that was being done in lots of other states, red states and blue states. I thought we ought to do it here in Illinois. I realized that there'd been a bill introduced in like 2011 and 2012 and 2013 and hadn't gone anywhere. So I thought I was going to try. So
why did you think that you were the person to try?
Well, no one else was getting it done. And I thought, you know, someone had to,
right.
And it just seemed like it would help people and help the environment, and no one else was doing it, so I thought I'd give it a shot.
Right on, okay.
And by coincidence, the guy who had been introducing the bill that didn't go anywhere, he was a state rep, so it's not like there was already a senator lined up.
Who was that
guy? His name was Lou Lang.
Okay.
He's from Skokie.
Okay.
But, like, I wasn't stepping on someone else's toes. There was, like, literally no one there, so why not?
All right.
So
you picked up the torch.
picked up the smoldering, very cold torch. So that meant it was time to write a bill. And I wrote the bill and introduced it and found out very quickly there were a lot of people opposed. And so I had to sit down and have this big meeting with everybody who might have an interest in this new PACE bill that I had introduced. Okay.
So when you say you wrote a bill, what does it mean to write a bill? Who writes bills?
This is actually kind of amazing. There's this place called the Legislative Reference Bureau, or people call it the LRB. Mm-hmm. And it's this army of amazing lawyers who work for the state. And then when a legislator wants to write a bill, like we can't write it ourselves. Like these folks have a special software and like special, you know, whatever barcodes they've got to put in their bills. And so we call them and ask them to write a bill for us. And so if you have an idea about a bill and you're a legislator, you call these folks and they're the experts and they're, you know, you sort of tell them what you want and they maybe if you're doing something super unwise, they try to steer you away from that. But ultimately, they write what you want them to write.
What would be something that's super unwise? And if they're there to just write a bill, like how do they get a chance to determine like what's wise and what's not?
Well, that's why it's not their job and they don't usually do a lot of that. Okay. But like if you're proposing something unconstitutional, they might be like, okay, hey, man, we'll write that for you if you want, but it's also unconstitutional.
Okay. So once you write the bill,
You then like physically give it to a person whose title is the Secretary of the Senate, and then it's considered filed, and then it's like online, and the public can see it.
So that's what we mean by introducing a bill.
Exactly.
Okay.
And here's the deal: it's not just the public who can see it; it's every single lobbyist in Springfield whose job is to read all those bills as soon as they become visible online. And if you introduce a bill that some of those lobbyists don't like, they come to you very fast. Mm-hmm. And so that's what happened in this situation.
Okay.
And turned out there's a bunch of lobbyists who wanted to talk about it. And before long, I found myself, you know, in a room in the Capitol building with a bunch of these folks having a pretty tense meeting. So the people in the room are a bunch of environmental lobbyists.
Okay.
They're with me. They're for the bill.
Okay.
Some like private sector guys who want to give out PACE loans or something. So they think they're going to profit if the bill passes.
Okay.
County clerks, because the county government's got to actually administer the process that sticks the thing on the property tax bill. Someone from the Illinois Finance Authority. And then a bunch of lobbyists from the financial industry, the bankers lobby, community bankers, credit unions. They were all against it because they thought, you know, this was competition with their effort to give out loans. And then there was someone from the attorney general's office. They didn't have a position yet. And typically any kind of professional lobbyist in Springfield who wants to be in that room winds up in that room.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is if you care about that bill and you're paying someone to be in Springfield full time, your voice is at the literal table where the deal gets cut, and anybody else in the state is completely frozen out of that process.
Okay.
Right? So if you think about that list, like of course the bankers have a lobbyist whose job is to read bills and figure out if that he doesn't like those bills. In Illinois, because we've got a really strong nonprofit sector, there's an environmental lobby as well. But like if you personally care about putting a solar panel on your house, like your opinion's not in that room at all.
Whose voice mattered the most in this room, or which voices mattered the most and why?
Well, here's the deal. It became clear that if we couldn't get the banking lobby to get comfortable, we weren't going to pass the bill.
Okay.
That became clear at one point.
Okay.
And I'm not saying the banking lobby always wins. I've beaten them other times. But there's just a limited number of times that they're going to get beat in a given session. And it became clear that they had the system worked out on this bill where if we didn't get them on board, we were not going to get the bill passed. I mean, look, why do the bankers not like the bill? The bankers didn't like the bill because they thought if the bill passed, then they would give out fewer home equity loans and make less profit.
Okay.
But they didn't say that. They said that they had incredible concern for consumers.
Mm.
They were just deeply, deeply, deeply anxious about what happens if there's unscrupulous loans given out by somebody else.
So what does a Senate sponsor like yourself do in a situation like that?
Well, ordinarily, I would have sort of pushed. But actually, that particular meeting blew up because one of the environmental lobbyists like couldn't take it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I can't sit here and listen to you guys who brought down the entire global economy with your predatory lending practices, come in this room and pretend to tell me that your problem with this bill is about concern for the consumers. That's a lie. How dare you? And then there was this big blow up. And then I had to go clean up that mess because if I just let this big, open, unpleasant fight simmer and not get resolved, we were not going to actually have a law that we could pass. So we just gave up for the time being and waited for the summer after the end of the legislative session, and then had a meeting that summer with the Attorney General's office.
What was the purpose of that meeting?
That purpose was to get the Attorney General on board, because we figured, like, all right, we're in trouble with the banks. We got to beat the banks. If you're going to beat the banks, you need somebody on your side. The Attorney General's
is the person to have, better
to have her on your side than not.
Right, right.
And
what were their concerns?
Well, it's a fair thing to wonder if you're giving out too many loans that aren't regulated properly, is that something that might be bad for the consumer? Mm. And you know what? The answer is yes, and you better write a bill that is properly regulating these loans. Otherwise, you're not doing your job.
So you heard this from the banks. You heard this from the AG. What do you do?
I went to the AG and I said, what do you need?
Okay. And because what did she say?
What their office said was, if you take individual residential homeowners out of the bill, then we don't have a consumer concern anymore.
Okay.
Because we figure a giant manufacturing plant, they have a legal team and a mechanism to make sure they're not getting screwed over by unscrupulous financial institutions.
And was that enough?
Well, it was enough to get the banks to leave us alone.
What kind of leverage does the AG have with banks and lobbyists?
Well, in this situation, the leverage was that the banks didn't really want to go to the legislators and be like, hey, we want to make more money, vote this good bill down. Mm-hmm. Instead, now they could go to legislators and be like, the Attorney General says that consumer protections aren't good enough in this bill.
Right.
It made their hand way stronger, right, is what happened. The banks were like, all right, if the Attorney General is going to demand that change, we feel like we might as well just go along with it once she gets her change, because we've gotten part of what we wanted, and it's going to be a lot harder to fight this fight with the Attorney General on the other side. And so at that point, everyone in that room, all those different lobbyists were like, we're cool with the bill. And the bill flew out of the Senate pretty quickly in the spring of 2015, and it felt like we were pretty much home free. And then it goes to the House, and there's just silence. There's just nothing.
Radio silence.
Pin drop.
Why?
You know, by now, Bruce Rauner, the Republican, is governor, and the Democratic Speaker, Mike Madigan, is in a big fight with him, and they're fighting about the budget. And kind of in an effort to dramatize how oppositional their positions are on the budget, Madigan took this position where he wouldn't let any bill move that even sounded like it might be related to the budget. And because this bill had the word tax in it, it got tied up in that political fight. And so it just hit a brick wall, and it wasn't moving.
So I feel like I hear this line, and like you said, it wasn't moving. The bill isn't moving, or this bill is moving. What does that even mean? And moreover, like, who gets to decide that?
Yeah, that's a very kind of Springfield Turner phrase. What it means is people have this, like, flowchart image of how a bill becomes a law. Like, it gets introduced, and then it gets assigned to a committee, and then once it gets
out of the—
Very schoolhouse rock, yeah, with like, kind of dark kind of addenda. You know, and then it moves from committee to the full House if it passes. Like, that people describe the process.
From which committee?
Well, it depends on the bill. So this is to your other question, who decides? Basically, the leader of the chamber decides everything. So in the House, the Speaker, Mike Madigan, and the Senate, the President, John Collerton, they control the entire calendar. They decide which committee a bill gets assigned to. They decide—
How many committees are there?
Dozens and dozens and dozens. And, you know, sometimes it feels kind of obvious, like, you know, there's an energy committee and maybe an energy bill should go to it. And sometimes there's, like, gray areas. Sometimes a bill gets assigned to a committee that has nothing to do with its subject matter because the Speaker wants it to pass or fail, and so he assigns it to a committee where it will pass or fail.
So bills, just to clarify, so bills are assigned to committees, but are people also assigned to committees, or do people get a chance to opt into whatever committee they want to be in?
This is a great question with an annoyingly complicated answer.
Oh, my God.
So every 2 years as a legislator—
Uncomplicated, Daniel.
I can't do it. Every 2 years as a legislator, you get assigned to a bunch of committees, right? Like, you might serve on the Higher Education Committee and the Human Services Committee, and you ask, and you get some of your requests and others not. But then the weird thing is that in the House, on the day of the vote, they can just swap people out. Like, if I'm on a committee and I'm going to vote no on a bill, the sponsor can come up to me and be like, hey, Daniel, I know you don't like my bill. Would you at least like take a walk and we'll swap in somebody who would vote yes?
What's the point of being on a committee?
It's
What's
ridiculous.
The point of being
it's
appointed to a committee if you're going to swap someone out
well,
for
if you,
your own interest?
If you've been appointed, you don't have to allow yourself to be swapped out. It's
okay.
Just some people do.
Oh, my gosh. These committees.
I know it.
This sounds like overly bureaucratic nonsense. I'm not going to lie. Just a little bit. Like.
So here's exactly what it is. It is a mechanism of control that is being disguised as bureaucratic nonsense.
Right. Okay.
Right? So like when the news says Mike Madigan runs the House, mm-hmm. what they mean is he decides the progress of each bill. He mm-hmm. he determines this bill will go to a committee or a different committee or no committee at all. If it comes to the full House, it'll get a vote or not. It's decided by literally one person in a completely opaque way.
So speaking of that one person, let's get back to the pettiness of Rauner and Madigan.
Yeah, so Rauner and Madigan are in this fight, and mm-hmm. Madigan basically made a decision that had nothing to do with this bill that said, I'm not going to let a certain type of bill, basically bills that have the word tax in them. And so this bill just got put on ice for basically a year and a half throughout all the rest of 2015 and then 2016. And over the summer of 2016, there was a lot of work done by a lot of allies and advocates that brought us to the point where in the fall veto session after the 2016 election, we finally thought the bill was going to move through the House.
First of all, what's a veto session?
The way the legislative calendar works is there's kind of the regular session, which is like the beginning of the year through the end of May. Mm-hmm. Then everyone goes home for the summer. And then usually we go back for a couple weeks in the fall. And that's called a veto session because the idea is, hey, you passed a bunch of bills in April and May, mm-hmm. and the governor might have vetoed some of them. So you got to go back to Springfield to see if you want to override the governor's vetoes. But in fact, you can do anything then, including like pass a whole new bill like this PACE bill.
What's the difference? Like, what are some of the key differences about like how things get passed in regular session versus veto session?
I mean, there's a real cultural difference, right? In regular session, you're there every week. You're kind of mm-hmm. working on things. There's a rhythm to it. The veto session, everyone's been like hither and yon for, you know, 5 months. There's also a technical difference, which is that if a bill passes after the end of May, anytime the rest of the year, June 1 through New Year's Eve, unless it doesn't go into effect until the following summer, it requires a supermajority. Hmm. So you need more votes to pass most bills in the veto session. And this was actually one of those bills.
This sounds like a wonderful opportunity to bring in our guest speaker.
That's right. So now we're up to 2016,
yeah.
And we have a 2016 expert, my friend David McEllis.
And joining us in the studio today is David McEllis. He's currently an environmental lobbyist with the Environmental Law and Policy Center, ELPC, who worked on passing the PACE bill, but he also used to be a staffer in the Illinois Senate. So he knows a lot about the legislative process from that point of view as well. Thanks for hanging with us, David. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tell us about how you got involved in this bill.
I started at ELPC in July of 2016, and one of the earliest emails that I got was about PACE. And when I looked into it and realized that the bill had passed the Senate in 2015, I was a little confused about why we were still talking about it in 2016 and whether it had any future. At that point, I talked with some of the PACE financiers who were involved in crafting the language for PACE, and they were under the impression that this was a thing that we could move in the fall veto session. We were given an indication that the bill was going to be allowed to move to House Revenue Committee, at which point?
So, you know, I was the Senate sponsor, so we were working together and kind of hanging out and strategizing, and we were in my office trying to figure out how to find the 60% supermajority in the Senate. And at that moment, you got this text message.
So I get a text message and I go to the House Revenue Committee to hear the PACE bill is going to be heard in House Revenue Committee. We didn't expect much, didn't expect fireworks. And then relatively quickly, it seemed that the Republicans weren't going to vote for the bill in committee. And the mm-hmm. bill, while it did pass from the House Revenue Committee, it passed on party lines. Mm-hmm. Only Democrats voted for the bill, no Republicans. The next day, After we spoke with some of those Republicans to see if there was a real bad issue with it, we didn't get that impression. The bill goes on the House floor. And I had actually gone to pick up lunch, did not know the timing of the bill, when the bill was going to be called, had gone to pick up lunch.
Which, by the way, is totally normal. It's just, it just happened in random order. It's not, you just never know.
Yes. And normally, bills don't get called if they're going to fail. So I was getting my lunch, and I got a text that said, Pace is up, and Pace was being debated on the House floor. In the course of that House debate, it came up that the governor was opposed to the bill. And the stated reason why the governor opposed the bill was because he opposed special service area tax bills. There had been no slip from the governor's office. The governor had not filed a witness slip, or no one from his office had filed a witness slip opposing the bill.
Really quickly, what is a witness slip?
It's sure.
Not necessarily common knowledge.
So. Yeah. And yes, it's common to say filing a slip. But anyone can file a witness slip on a bill, either supporting, opposing, or showing no position on a bill. So if you want as an individual to file a witness slip on a bill like minimum wage increase, you can go in and say, file a witness slip, and it will show up and be recorded. So there is a long debate on the House floor. I think there might have even been questions about whether renewable energy is viable, those kind of questions that some of them pointed, some of them kind of out there questions.
So what happened between yesterday and today in that point in time?
I'm not sure, but I know that in October of 2016, something happened with the Senate sponsor of that bill.
Who was the Senate sponsor?
Senator Daniel Biss.
Ex-senator.
At the time, Senator Daniel
Yes. Biss.
Right. Now, citizen Daniel Biss, free to speak openly about this story. So that October, leading up to the Trump-Clinton election, I was running a super PAC that spent $10 million running negative ads about Bruce Rauner and Donald Trump. And so Governor Bruce Rauner may have not had super fuzzy feelings about me at that time.
Okay. Oh, we're getting down to the bottom of it.
It's possible that Bruce Rauner felt a little salty about
me. Okay, okay. All this dancing, and now we're getting to the root of the issue.
And well, it doesn't get better then, because by November, when this is all happening, there's a rumor out there that I might be planning on running for governor against Bruce Rauner.
Which you absolutely were.
That rumor did come true eventually.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
So it seemed like maybe somebody in the governor's office made a decision that was not totally divorced from personal politics.
And let me restate that the stated reason that the governor did not like the bill was that the governor did not like special service area tax bills.
Okay.
So we kind of went back to the drawing board, but not really, because we had a bill that had no opposition. We made a few changes to the bill, but
what were the changes?
Not many. We removed the language
consumer.
About the calling it an SSA tax. Unfortunately, it was indicated that it might be better if we had a different Senate sponsor in 2017.
I.e. not Daniel Biss.
Sorry, Daniel.
That was a record-breakingly phenomenal use of the passive voice. It was indicated.
I heard that too. But it was perfect. Well done, David. Well done.
I pride myself on using active voice too. Shoot. So we changed our Senate sponsor, and we had bipartisan sponsorship and bipartisan co-sponsors. We got Republicans from suburban Republicans to be sponsors and co-sponsors of the bill.
So who became your Senate sponsor?
The Senate sponsor was Karen McConaughey, who is a Kane County Republican, who was also incredibly supportive of the PACE program and generally well-liked by the governor.
And not giving attack ads.
Anyway, the punchline is that the bill didn't change in any way except the sponsor wasn't me, and all of a sudden it got really easy.
Yeah, the end outcome of the bill was exactly the same.
Okay.
We removed the word tax, which was helpful.
And the word
we changed
Daniel.
The sponsor.
Yes. And the word Daniel.
So in 2017, that bill started in the House and ended up passing 73-28 with some debate. The bill then goes to the Senate with the new Republican sponsor. And there was no debate on the Senate floor, and it passed 53-0. Thank you, Daniel. You voted yes.
But you did ask me not to co-sponsor the bill.
I don't know if I asked or not.
David, I'm watching your affect, and as Daniel almost spits out water onto the floor.
I have a lot of expensive equipment here for a spit take.
You seem to be much more careful about your words than, oh, this guy over here, Daniel, who is very loose with the lips and spilling the tea on this podcast. Obviously, he's doesn't have anything at stake here. He's chilling. Why is there a reason why you've been like so intentionally crafting your words and being careful about what to and what not to say? What's your role now?
Sure. So I still go to Springfield all the time, and I still have to operate within this system, and whether flawed as it is, but so I still have to go there. So I've been thinking a little bit about who I'm making mad.
That makes sense.
Hopefully, nobody.
If the speculations around this thing is true or are true, this got caught up in two types of pettiness. You have Madigan on one hand stopping any bill that's coming through that's connected to the budget as a punishment to Rauner. And then you have Rauner. This is like terrible, like not even funny, but also really funny. But like not wanting the man who's smearing his name in the streets possibly weren't running against him to have a win, i.e. you. So, I mean, it just...
Pettiness all around.
Pettiness galore. I feel like we were at a petty crossroads. Petty roads. Like, it's just made no sense at all. How do we believe in a process that actually is not really working for our interests, or it doesn't seem like it's really working for our interests, when something as simple as a sponsor who the governor may or may not like could kill a bill that easily? What do you say to the average voter and engaged citizen who hears this and feels that very kind of cynical reaction?
I think if you look at this story from one point of view, it's like a perfect caricature of the horror stories people tell themselves about politics, right? Mm-hmm. You've had an idea that everybody was on board with. It would be good for the environment. And it just ran into a brick wall because someone didn't like somebody else because of an electoral issue. This is, to some extent, not even just a problem in – forget Chicago, forget Illinois, but it's not even just a problem in politics. It's a problem when human beings come together and try to work with each other to solve problems.
True.
And it doesn't matter
Very
if it's
true.
A family or a for-profit business or a non-for-profit or a soccer league. Like, stuff gets complicated. But I also think that the force that helps with this type of problem is public pressure, right? And so the question is, let's say this had been an unclearable hurdle. Let's say that even changing the sponsor and taking my name off the bill altogether wouldn't have been enough. Would it have then been possible to go to the public and kind of shame people into saying, okay, we have to just do this? I think that enough public pressure can always overcome these things. And the question ultimately, a lot of the time, is are the legislators willing to actually take the fight to the public, or do they want to keep the pettiness quiet so that they can be petty again tomorrow?
If we were able to separate policy from politics, that would be great. But I don't – it's the system that we're working with. And I don't know that our system is worse than others in Illinois, but there is – there are certain things about the system that make it difficult for regular people to be involved and make it difficult for also for regular people to understand the, this movement from one chamber to another chamber in the course of hours, sometimes during late in session. There's some parts of it that are very difficult for regular people to understand. I try not to be cynical and I try to be positive because I think otherwise working in this field and working in for a nonprofit in Springfield can be really disappointing and really disheartening. But I try to be positive with it. And this was a six-year process. There were five other sessions where this didn't go anywhere. And it's that kind of stick-with-itness that, that gets certain policies passed.
In conclusion, that's how a non-controversial bill becomes a law. If there had been more or had been any public attention, what might have been different here, Daniel?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, like, wow, so that's the non-controversial stuff. It's like incredible, right?
Yeah.
Incredible. Took years. You know, I think one big thing is that it would have been a lot harder for that pettiness on all sides to have continued if the public was watching. And I think public pressure can just in general make the legislative process a lot healthier.
You know what I took away from this?
What?
I need to find me a lobbyist of my own to hire and represent my interests. That is what I got away from, that I took away from this episode. So on the next episode, what are we talking about, Daniel?
We're going to continue this streak of cheerful, optimistic topics. We are talking about corruption. It's going
to
be awesome.
I'm excited to talk about it, but it's terrible, right? Like, I shouldn't be so excited to be talking about corruption, but really, I just want to expose all of the just ratchery that's happening down in Springfield that y'all don't know about.
Find out next week.
There's the tea. Join us.
Hi there, this is Casey, co-founder of State Matters and producer of Ill Informed. Thank you so much for listening and taking an interest in learning more about how this wacky stuff works in Springfield and how you can get involved to make the state better. If you support what we do, please consider making a donation at statematters.org. Even $10 makes a difference and also gives that little boost that someone out there is supporting the work we're doing. Again, you can donate at www.statematters.org. And while you're at it, rate and review this podcast to help more folks find us. Thanks.